Today, I would like to delve a bit deeper into a topic which is on everyone's minds, which is the fear of death. This moment of lockdown worldwide is such an unprecedented time where everyone is forced to be indoors. There has been a break in the continuity of one's routine. Of one's busyness with life. Our dependency of our work routine, perhaps, our dependency on our social structures, relationships, most of which have now collapsed, thankfully, temporarily. But what tends to happen is the mind, which is lost, doesn't know what to do, starts getting into the same patterns, making innumerable phone calls, trying to read all the newspapers, PDF versions all the time, and getting sucked in back into this illusion, so to speak. That is why Maharaj had said, we love to be alive, but we cannot bear our beingness, so we tend to get busy doing things. That is the paradox. We love to exist, to live, to be alive, yet very few can just be. And the mind starts kicking into the doing mode again, even though one is at home. So it is truly a gift to use these times to reflect on what drives us, what impels us, what patterns we are dominated by. And get insights into these dimensions to take us forward in life, lockdown or no lockdown. It is an opportunity for the lockdown of the thinking mind. You see, coming back to our dependency on our social structures, there was a very wealthy man, an industrialist who passed away. And one of the things he had mentioned was that a man's worth should be judged by the number of people who show up at his funeral. A man's worth in life should be judged by the number of people who show up at his funeral. And when he passed on, thousands showed up. But the reason they showed up was because he owed half of them money, and so they thought they must attend not only the funeral but the condolence meetings so that they had a sliver of a chance by showing their face to his family that they would release the dues owed to them. And the other half showed up because they were thankful that he was no more. So these are measures and yardsticks of dependency on external factors, whereas the spiritual journey is the journey within. That is its gift. So let's just explore briefly, what is this fear of death? First of all, who has this fear of death? Now, please pardon me if it sounds a bit silly what I'm going to say, but it's just to explain things in a simple way. When the baby is born, up till the age of, let's say, 2 years of age, the baby is pure presence, pure existence. I am. Not I am this or I am that. The ego, which is the identification with the name and form as a separate entity, comes in at that age, 1.5 to 2 years of age, where the baby now knows that if I cry, my mother will come running. So the ego is not formed at birth, but comes in at the age of 1.5 to 2 years. Now, is the baby afraid of death? Or is the ego afraid of death? That ego, which became a shell, a hardened shell as we grew up, through our conditioning, through our identifications, our social identifications, economic identifications, the family we were born into, our monetary identifications, our geographical identifications, became me and my story. That is the one who is afraid of death. So between birth and that age, that presence is still here now. It will be there till the death of this body. That part is not afraid of death. I'm using the word part as if it is separate from the ego. It's actually the same, this consciousness. But there is no fear of death when there is no ego with its sense of doership and its identifications. If something I am identified with is threatened or dies or is destroyed, I feel it is an assault on me. Let's use a simple example. If I have an expensive shirt which I cherish, and one day in the washing something goes wrong, the maid mixes it up with another color and it's ruined, because what I identified with is now destroyed, it hurts me. I may shout and scream at the maid because I feel I am diminished because of the lack of that shirt which I identified with. Now, this is a shirt. We can be identified with certain beliefs, certain thought processes. And if someone says something opposite, we get offended. We take offense. How dare you say this? This is what it is. This is my position. This is the truth. So again, we feel threatened that we will die in that sense when something threatens who we are, or rather who we think we are. This bundle of concepts, when it is a threat, it does pretty serious things to protect itself. How many times a day do you feel offended? That is a good measure to see the deception being played by the ego. After all, it is the ego which gets offended. So why not die to all this during the course of one's life? That is why the saying, the secret of life is to die before you die. Take simple examples. Observe in your own life, what is it during the day which upsets you? Let's say you love a particular movie which you have seen. And you tell your friend, hey, have you seen that movie? It's terrific. And your friend says, oh, really? I thought it was quite bad. Are you offended? Have you taken it as an assault upon yourself, which has threatened you? Find those relationships which trigger your buttons. That is where one's spiritual growth is. That is where the awakening is. What is it that is getting triggered in you? And you will soon notice that who is triggering it becomes irrelevant. The whole Bhagavad Gita is about Krishna saying that when you see me in all beings, you will see Ishvara. Simply means when you accept completely and totally, without a doubt, that nobody truly does anything. Everyone is shaped by the Lord Almighty, just like I have been shaped by their genetics, their conditioning, over which they did not have any control, just like I didn't. Then you reach the obvious conclusion that everyone is an instrument of the same source, the same consciousness. And then you no longer view life as this battle between me and the other. Not only others, but you no longer view it as a battle between me and what is happening to me. Your whole position of opposition starts dissolving with whatever events transpire in your life. Sometimes good, sometimes not good. But that is the journey of life. So you accept more and more that this is how life is playing out. And you accept more and more that very little is in your control. Just as we have seen how people have been completely thrown off by this event. And I have received so many emails where they say, we now understand what it means that one does not have any control on life. You have been forced to sit at home. This is a very obvious example. What about the subtle ones which we have taken for granted? That our breathing is not in our control. We are sitting on planet Earth thanks to gravity. If that wasn't there, we would be flying all over the place. Is that in our control? Our body is more than 70% water. And we know the impact of the moon that creates high tides and low tides. So what is the moon's impact on our body and emotions? And so on and so forth. The list is endless. And we are always scheming and plotting to control ourselves, others, and outcomes. And as my teacher Rameshji would say, what I refer to as the three commandments of life. Sometimes you get what you want. Second, sometimes you don't get what you want. And third, sometimes you get something completely unexpected. Many times for the worse, sometimes for the better. No matter what happens, the outcome is one of these three. Sometimes you get what you want, sometimes you don't get what you want, and sometimes you get something completely unexpected. Many times for the worse, sometimes for the better. Just accepting this, which is already one's life experience, brings peace of mind. Do all that you can do in a given situation and leave the rest to God. It's not rocket science. It is one's own life experience. So what happens as a result of this understanding, I would like to read out one quotation of Rameshji. Spiritual awakening means that the nightmares and pleasures of the living dream called life don't really matter anymore. Spiritual awakening means that the nightmares and pleasures of the living dream called life don't really matter anymore. Why? Because you know that is the nature of life. Everything comes and goes on the screen of consciousness. Some ups, some downs. And therefore, one gets more and more established in witnessing the flow of life. One understands that one is that which is aware of what the pleasures are and what the pains are. So the me with its sense of doership, which is always running around all over the place, starts receding back, centering. That is the spiritual awakening. Accepting the transient nature of life and living, the content of one's life, as well as life itself. So then what dies is the ego with its sense of doership. Then who is left to be afraid of death? Isn't it an irony that if someone tells us, as Rameshji would say, that tonight you're going to have a very deep sleep, and I will extend it for a few days for you, would you complain? And so Rameshji had said that death is nothing but a long and infinitely extended deep sleep. That is the irony of life, that we all go to sleep at night, unafraid of our absence as the me with its story, because we have this conviction that we will wake up the next day. But the fact is that in those moments of deep sleep, we do not exist as the separate me with its story and identifications. And we are not afraid of that. So living the teaching means the death of hatred, malice, jealousy, envy, pride, arrogance, guilt, and shame, the shackles of the ego which bind it. That is the gift of this glorious teaching. When you accept that the nature of life is duality, the nature of life is not knowing what the next moment brings. The nature of life is knowing that this too shall pass. The nature of life is to know that there is nobody to hate. If everyone is an instrument of the divine, and then, as I saw a question posted at the start of this live stream, what is the difference between Dvaita and Advaita, duality and non-duality? The difference is simply this: the God and me in Dvaita has become God is me in Advaita. God is me, God is you, God is he, God is she. All there is consciousness. Advaita, not two. To know this is to see not with the eyes of duality, but with the third eye of knowledge, Agnya. To know that the polaric opposites of life are the design of duality, between which everything that happens exists. That knowing is Advaita. You can only know what a pleasure is if you know what a pain is. You can only know the color black because other colors exist. If there were no other colors in the world, you would not know that black is black. or whichever color. So life is short. How short it is, we do not know. Whether it is 100 years short, 80 years short, 50 years short, it is short because it is temporary. It is transient. So in those years, in the number of breaths they are left in one's body-mind organism, why not allow consciousness to shine naturally, spontaneously, as the saying goes, as Ramana Maharshi said, let what comes come, let what goes go, and see what remains. Let what comes come, let what goes go, and see what remains. I would like to read a couple of lines of Nisargadatta Maharaj, after which we can look at the questions. With self-knowledge, there is an end of all good and bad, and there is the well-being of all. One sees all alike, and everyone is worth helping. I'll repeat this. With self-knowledge, there is an end of all good and bad, and there is the well-being of all. One sees all alike, and everyone is worth helping. There is no difference between self-realization and seeing the same God in all. We must achieve the freedom from seeing any difference. Simple words. There is no difference between self-realization and seeing the same God in all. We must achieve the freedom from seeing any difference. Simple words of the great masters, nothing too complex, nothing too theoretical, too intellectual. Simple words that reflect our own life's experience. If you take a person you don't get along with and understand truly that they are entitled to their point of view, to what they are saying, because the way God has shaped them and their conditioning. No matter how much you get upset by what is said, their worldview has been shaped for them on the basis of which they take decisions and say things, just like you do. What happens is the sting of doership in the relationship is pulled out. The thorn in the flesh is extracted. When there is no blame and hatred and malice. When that is extracted, the bondage of the relationship, the action-reaction loop snaps, because you are no longer caught in this blame game and finger-pointing and he said, she said. That tennis match can take place only when two people are hitting the racket. That is what breaks. The involvement in that dynamic of that relationship breaks with the understanding. You will still say what you have to say, but when the sting of doership is pulled out, you will be quite surprised that perhaps even after this conflict or incident, you may sit back and compassion may arise for this person. Or compassion may arise for yourself. That this is the Maya, this is the illusion, this is truly the Leela of life, the great game of life. Where everything appears outside of me. And you will smile, you will laugh. Because you now know that all this is arising in your own consciousness. And then one lives a life which will be well lived. Or the life courageous, as Rameshji used to say in his early talks. So I'll now start looking at the questions which have been posted. Questions which are already answered in previous talks, there is no point in answering now. I will look at something which is fresh or which I feel will give us some new insights. Rajiv says, my experience of the difference between the waking, dreaming and deep sleep state is getting fainter day by day. What are your views on this? This is a bit of a tricky statement to make. If one was to say that my experience of the waking state and of all the trials and tribulations and ups and downs of life is looking more and more like a dream, like an illusion, unreal. Then yes, that means the understanding is deepening. Why? Because in the waking state, there's identification. Identification with the name and form as a separate entity. In the deep sleep state, there is impersonal consciousness. So who is the one who is saying my experience of the waking, dream and deep sleep state is getting fainter by the day? That one is still standing. The experiencer. In deep sleep, there is no experiencer. In your own life, take something which really bothered you 1 year ago. Doesn't it look like a dream now? It's gone. You might even wonder, my God, I actually saw those days. I can't believe what I went through, or I can't believe how I thought at that time. That illusoriness of life is seen. That passing by of events is seen. That illusion is seen. But when that is seen, even the one who is seeing it is seen to be an illusion. That is important. If all that is unreal, if all what I see in the waking state has this quality of being ethereal and unreal, then I too must be unreal. That is the true seeing. And if one's experience of the waking state is getting fainter, then the dream state follows. Because generally, dreams are psychological reactions to the waking state, which appear in symbolic forms. For example, the main object in your dream is you. Let's take a classic example. You dream of a lion in a cage. And you wake up in the morning and say, oh, I dreamt of a lion in a cage. That lion is you. Lion represents strength. Strength is feeling caged. So what is it in your waking state which has got converted to this dream? Can give you insights about an aspect do you feel of yours, which is strength in this case, is feeling repressed, is feeling bottled up, and so on. You have psychologists who can analyze dreams, etc. So both are related, the waking state and the dream state, because both are due to identified consciousness. And dreams can provide fascinating insights. So yes, if one's experience of the waking state is feeling fainter, then it will also be for the dream state as such. But make no mistake that it is even the experiencer who is dissolving with the experience. If that is not happening, then it is only an intellectual understanding.